Lord, you love me so much, and you show up every single day, and you remind me that I can be in relationship with people, and I can be in community, and I can love others, and they can love me, but I'm expecting my value and my self-worth to come from you.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Let's Be Real podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Eunice, and I believe we need all the help we can get when it comes to living a full and free life. Here you'll find honest truth, practical tips, and perspective changes that help you embrace the miracle that is your life. It's an in-process conversation that's going to be unfiltered, and it better be fun. Let's get real together. Hey everyone, welcome back to Let's Be Real. I'm your host, Nicole Eunice, and I am here today joined in person, for those of you watching on YouTube, with my friend Adrian Wright. And Adrian and I don't know what you think of me, because we haven't had this conversation, so okay. This could be a courageous conversation right now. When I first met Adrian, there was like that little piece where I think that once you become a woman who's in leadership, yeah. you like notice other women in leadership. Like, I like to get to know her. And the first time I met you, I was like, I'd like to get to know her. So Adrian is the founder and she's the CEO of U-Turn, which I'll have you describe that in just a minute. Great. Also the founder and CEO of The Collaboratory.
Yes.
Cool. One of my favorite names of anything.
Oh,
so just
you.
So you know, very yeah. clever. And we're going to talk about your leadership journey and a couple of different themes about what it's really like to be a woman who leads today. So Adrian, welcome to the show.
Thank you for being here. I'm excited. And yes, I had the same feeling towards you.
Oh, you did.
I went almost a year and a half telling other people, I was like, at some point I'm going to approach Nicole and like try to get coffee with her. And they're like, I think you can just do that normally. I was like, no, I can't. But I'm going to work up the courage. So yeah, thank you.
Well, here we are sharing yeah. a wonderful glass of water together.
Yeah.
And okay, so I did a little bit of digging before okay. today because I wanted to go back to kind of your like origin story of your leadership. So I'd love for you to tell us about your first job.
Okay.
Your first big girl job, like out of school, not
yeah,
your
I was
very
like, not,
first job.
Not my first
I mean,
job.
That's also an interesting conversation, but your first real job yeah. and what you think you learned then that still matters for where you are today. Hmm. So tell us about your first job and then maybe fill us in a little bit about where you are today.
Yeah, my first job was in finance. And so I worked at a company called Northwestern Mutual. Mm. It's local here. They're all over the United States. They might even be global now. But I started off as their receptionist.
Nice.
And then I moved into recruiting, I think within like 3 months. And I think that was just more because of my personality.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was just like talking to everybody as they came in and they're like, I think you might need to be in recruiting. Like you just keep. And I moved up in the recruiting process in HR and recruiting there. And then I even got my license. And so I technically could sell as a rep.
Okay.
So as a financial advisor, but operated as a recruiter, like for the most part. And I moved up into the highest recruiting position there before I left and went to another large company. And I'm trying to think, what is the thing that I learned while I was there?
Well, I noticed like the recruiting thread, like in yeah. your, like that you continued on in that, but you didn't start in that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm just wondering like how did that skill set
like
there? Impact you today?
My education is in psychology,
okay.
so it applies. Yeah. and I was a great recruiter because of that. But I'm thinking, I think it's relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So like, what I learned then, and I kind of learned this the hard way, is that maintaining and cultivating relationships matter.
Mm-hmm.
And you can think things are like all good and fine. And then all of a sudden, like somebody's like, hey, this is like, I either want to sever this relationship or mm-hmm. I don't want to go in this direction or whatever. And I think I learned that in my first job. But then like, it's like probably even more important now.
Yeah. Does that,
in
I mean,
my current role.
I know you're good at relationships
because yeah.
you mentioned that, or good at like sales, recruiting, but have you had to work on the cultivating of relationships? You mentioned that.
Yeah. I think it's like the authenticity of relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm good at making people feel like we're in relationship, right? Like I'm like, you know, you feel good about this. But I think it's like, it's the deep stuff, like
mm-hmm.
for people to really feel like you're in their corner
mm-hmm.
and that they, you know them and cultivating it and keeping it going. Because sometimes you think you're good with people and then 3 or 4 months go by, 6 months go by, and that's in a work relationship or a personal relationship, and then you find out you're not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cultivating it.
Yeah, I know. Oh, man, I've had
it's
to learn that, too. I think just
yeah.
that, like,
relationships are always dynamic. And
yes.
trust is either being built or eroded. And like yeah. it takes some work. And maybe it's harder for people who seem like they're good at it because you and I have talked not on this podcast about that chameleon, like I'll just sort of fit in wherever I am, which
yes.
Can sort of lead to not being your authentic self. So yes. tell us a little bit, talk us through like how you went from there to here and kind of what your everyday yes. life looks like now.
I'm going to try to be brief about this one. So yeah, I left Northwestern and went to a large financial company. And you guys don't mind if I say companies on this podcast, so I can say it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I left and went to Capital One.
I mean, recruited. They should be proud of you. So.
Okay, yeah. I left and went to Capital One, and I got recruited to Capital One during one of their acquisitions. Mm. So it was a difficult time, and I kind of was like, man, I got a lot to learn. And it was Northwestern Mutual operated more like an agency, so I was going from agency to corporate. Uh-huh. And I make that emphasis because after Capital One, I was a know-it-all and thought, oh, I got agency experience. I got corporate experience. I got my psychology degree. I'm going to go into business for myself. I'm set.
So wait, how old were you at this time?
27.
Okay. See, and that's an important part
yeah,
of the
27,
story, right?
28. Yeah.
You're like, I have literally learned everything I need to know about adulthood. That sounds very familiar.
And I'm
going to
go into business
well.
For myself. Yeah.
Okay.
And so I had started like a small consulting boutique that was consulting like small organizations, nonprofits, churches, mm-hmm. And still offering the same stuff like organizational development, recruiting, you know, that kind of thing, HR, basic HR. And I went on contract with a large financial company that was out of Bethesda, and I was traveling back and forth, and they were like, hey, you're going to have to move here at some point. And I had been in Richmond for so long, and I'm like, and I'm originally from Northern Virginia in that area. And so I like thought I wanted to live there, but I was like, Richmond, if anybody knows anything about Bethesda, I was like, it's just two different worlds. Like, I don't know if I can do it. And so then I decided not to do it. And at that time, I got recruited by a small, they're now more medium-sized, large tech consulting firm here in Richmond. And same thing, recruiting, HR. And I was like, this is great. And that was the same time that I was joining the board for U-Turn.
Okay.
And so we were transitioning the then executive director of U-Turn out. And so the board came to me and said, hey, Adrian, why don't you just like figure out the organization, figure out what's going on, and then recruit the next CEO.
Gotcha. Okay. And tell the fine folks what U-Turn is.
So U-Turn historically is a sports performance academy. I always stumble on this because I'm like, well, it depends on when you are part of U-Turn, what you think it is and what I'm going to describe it as. Historically, we have provided sports performance, so elite sports programming and training.
Uh-huh.
Now, in the last like 10 years, 15 years, we're more than that. And so we're offering more programming to youth and adults. I started the Collaboratory of Virginia out of U-Turn. But even before that, it was a house for many nonprofits mm-hmm. to kind of set up shop and run their operations. And so today I consider it just a value asset community center for Richmond.
Oh, I yeah. love that. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And that's a big jump. So you've mentioned some different seasons of transition in yeah. your life. And like, obviously, when we look back, I feel like this happens to me too. I tend to tell the positive side of a
yes.
story because that's
yeah.
my nature. But tell us a little bit, because for me, one of the things I feel like I work with people more than anything else on, whether it's folks who come up to me after church or individual clients or teams, is these seasons of transition and
yeah.
like these spaces in between. And you've mentioned actually several transitions that have happened in your life. So lay us now over that story, kind of your personal life,
mm-hmm.
your emotional space. Like, mm-hmm. what did you learn during those seasons? What have you learned about transitions?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say my Enneagram number. I'm an Enneagram 3.
Mm-hmm.
And so I run fast and hard mm-hmm. just for the wins. And it took a long time for me to look back and say, like, what did I learn through these transitions?
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing that I've learned is I love leadership. Like, I like taking on big things mm-hmm. and being part of big initiatives and taking big risks. But I also fail big.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you take on big stuff, and that was a big problem
yeah.
for me for a long time, just because of my personality type, but also just because it was hard for me to find value, like to find my value in anything else.
Yeah.
And so that's the biggest thing that I've learned. And I think I'm still learning that
mm-hmm.
Even today. Like, I sometimes think that I've mastered that. And I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to fail hard at this.
Yeah.
If I fail but when it happens, I'm like, no, you know, or I start to work through that process of like either trying to cover up that failure or scrapping to try to figure it
mm-hmm.
out. versus just embracing it and saying, yeah, it was a big initiative, and so therefore it would come with a big failure. And that's okay, as long as you're not hurting people and you're not hurting yourself in that failure. It's okay.
Yeah.
To take on something big.
My goodness. Yeah. Talk to me, like, take me down a little bit, and you're doing it a little bit right now because you're talking about the script that you have in your head to work through that. Tell me about, like, how you work through mistakes like that. You know what I mean? You haven't mentioned one specifically, but I remember as a fellow Enneagram 3, I'm sure y'all are not surprised, one of the little taglines for a 3 is you're only as good as your next success.
Yeah.
And I remember I was trying to write, I had started like this, as many Enneagram 3s do. I'm like, sure, I'll write a book. No big deal. Like, it is a big deal. And I wanted it to happen faster. And I thought it would be easier than it would be standard. Yeah. So I remember sitting at lunch with my parents, actually, and I was just expressing my deep frustration at the amount of like failure I was experiencing. And I was like having this existential crisis over pizza where I was like, I guess I'm doomed to fail because I'll always try to do something bigger.
Yeah.
I'll never stop trying something bigger, which means the only way it's going to end is when I have ultimate failure. Because I and I was like blowing my own mind. Like, and I think when I look back on that, I think, and that's when I had to develop a new relationship with failure.
Yeah.
And I'm still working on it, too. But I'm curious, like, in the little ways, even when you think about your leadership in the last month, like, what are some of those ways that you've reframed mistakes or when things just don't go the way you expect?
Yeah. I think I have to say, and reframe success, too.
Okay.
Because it's, I think for folks who need success, and I am one of those, you will make anything successful. So even if some threes don't know that they're failing at something because they've been able to like switch it around or change the narrative on it to say, oh, I'm going to pull out the things that are actually successful. So I would say the way that I've handled failure and success. And today, even in the last couple of months, the biggest thing that I've learned is that no one cares, but it doesn't matter how much I achieve. I don't gain any additional relevancy. And so for me, I know I'm going to go really deep quickly on this, but for me, it's about relevancy and it's about value.
Yeah.
And as a believer, I'm like, my relevancy and my value comes from Christ. But when I'm operating in the day-to-day, it's like, that's a hard reminder. And it's just so easy for me to get caught up. So regardless of whether I'm successful, I start to then look for people to validate that success.
Yes.
'Cause I'm like, I'm only as good as, my next success or my next failure. And I'm also looking for outside sources to validate that.
Yep.
And if somebody says, hey, this is just my own story. This is I'm not putting this on any other three. Even if I succeed at something, I'm like, man, I kicked butt at that.
Yeah.
If no one else acknowledges it, and that comes with some of like my gender, my race, my age, if people are like, I don't know if you really did it, or maybe you had extra help, I'm now going after the next thing. So that's the driver.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of like, I have to take a step back and I'm like, all right, Lord, am I doing the things you really want me to do? Or am I doing things because I need that validation so badly? And I'm not set up well just by way of how you made me in this culture to ever get the satisfaction that I need if that's the only thing I'm looking for.
Oh, it's so true.
So like I could achieve a bunch of things and, you know, I'm waiting for like the slow clap as I'm like walking down the aisle and I'm like going towards the stage and I'm like, I did it. And it never comes.
Or it's so fleeting. Like it
it's
comes
fleeting.
And goes.
It's fleeting. But for a lot of people who look like me, same age as me, my gender, my race, sometimes it never comes.
Yeah.
Like it is. It's either fleeting or it's not even there,
right,
or people don't even really want to acknowledge it. So,
oh, so true.
It's difficult, and the Lord's still working on me.
Are you, you know, I totally relate and find myself having to do intentional work to reframe success, use the same word in a very different way, and to actually process daily life. From the position of, I just shared this in with my own counselor, like processing daily life and being like, having a meaningful conversation with my 17-year-old daughter that was way more important than anything I did mm-hmm. in that day. Like, that was the best part of the day.
Yeah.
But the world wants to tell me, no, it's what someone claps for. And nobody clapped for that.
Because
I was, and I didn't put it on social media. You know, like, you know, it was just
no one
us.
Knows.
Except, wait, now I'm doing it right now. Oh my gosh, forgive me. For I've sinned.
No.
I'm just kidding. But it's like funny, isn't it? But no, I mean, I honestly do share that because it's like, yeah, what are those things for you? Have you developed some rhythms or habits or hobbies in mm-hmm. your life that aren't about someone clapping for you?
I'm going to be honest. I am working through that right now. So it is very difficult. I am slowly learning, and this is through therapy, that some of the things that I even considered for a long time to be a hobby, and I was like, this is my thing. This is what I love doing. It was still for achievement.
Yeah.
So it is... For me, and because this has been a part of my life, like, I can't remember a time when I wasn't trying to achieve. Like, my parents put me on a co-ed soccer team when I was four.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, I don't know. And I enjoyed that. I enjoy sports, and I enjoy being physically active. But it's still for the purpose of achievement and for recognition. Like, I would complain. I think I remember my mom saying that I would complain when there weren't a lot of people watching our soccer game. I was like, where was everybody today?
Yeah.
And she's like, what? Like, and I think like early on, she's probably like, why do you care about that? And I'm like, where are the people?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a couple of things, like I've gotten back into some of my art and just trying to sketch and draw. And that's some of the stuff that I did when I was younger. I also did a little bit of ballet. And so I'm trying to get back into that. But again, it is very difficult for me to identify things that I enjoy strictly, and there's I'm not looking for recognition or I'm not looking for approval.
Well, I mean, this is such a sweet moment because obviously the podcast is called Let's Be Real, and to come as an unfinished product to an interview, you know, where basically I'm like, I've noticed your success. I want to share who you are with other people.
Yeah.
But you're taking that like holier like direction, which is, hey, I'm still figuring this. I actually don't quite know how to do this. And, you know, I've got a few years on you and I am still also trying to figure out how to do that. And one thing I've been told is sometimes the things that you're doing for achievement, when you are able to stop doing them for achievement, they will still be the things that you love, but your motivation will be different and your heart for it. And that has been such a like beautiful like growth path. So I love that. Thank you, Adrian.
Yeah.
Just for sharing that.
So I did have one thing that I just thought of. I'm doing this podcast and one exercise is the person who's doing it with me is not the same. And I think that that's been a blessing because I'm still doing it to be like, all right, how many followers are you? How many people are going to listen to it? And the other person is not doing it for that reason. So that's just one thing, to do things with people where they're not looking for that.
Yeah.
And so it kind of forces you to stop looking for
that. Well, and I love that because where we started this conversation was, what does it mean to cultivate relationships?
Yes.
And cultivating a relationship with someone who's not driven by the same things as you actually is an authentic relationship, right?
Because
you're like, we're not just here to achieve together and then like go our separate ways if someone's not successful or whatever. So let's fast forward just because some people are probably like, get back to U-turn. So, because there's a big deal. I mean, you're a female CEO. Yeah. You have what's called like double jeopardy, meaning you're not white and you're not a man.
Mm-hmm.
You're, you know, a black female in this corporate space doing what you do. And I'd love to just hear from your perspective, what has that been like?
Yeah. I will piggyback off of what I was sharing before of you're never really getting the recognition. I think, and I'm going to throw a third one in there, being young. I started at U-turn when I was 33.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, I was always a part of teams. I was never in the C-suite.
Okay.
And so even though I had gotten really close or felt like I was, or reporting directly to somebody in the C-suite, I wasn't in it. And so now... And I thought it was going to be easy going into a nonprofit doing this, but it's not. It doesn't matter what I do. People either are like, you're not doing enough. You don't have the opportunity to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So either, and so that's where part of my three does that, but also that double jeopardy pushes me to cover up mistakes or to cover up failures or to say, oh, I got to spin this some way, because then I'm a monolith. I'm speaking for every African-American female young leader out there. And people are going to be like, see, this is the reason why they can't do this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Right. So then there's that. I feel that responsibility. So that's been a part of the experience. But it's like you can't fail, but also if you achieve, you can't gloat either, mm-hmm. right? So you can't celebrate it because it's like, well, be humble. Mm-hmm. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't shine too much. And so it's I would say, yeah, it's double. This double jeopardy is real, but like it's intense. And I read an article recently, and I'm just going to share from my experience as an African-American female, that there is something called this like ongoing depression. Mm. That it's like you don't know that you are suffering from just like ongoing disappointment.
Yeah.
But it's from never really feeling like you're ever getting acknowledged for what you're achieving and always having to strive.
Mm.
So it's like you're never going to be good enough.
Yeah.
And even if you achieve big things, you're still Black and you're still a woman.
Yeah. And so you still experience this ongoing not belonging or whatever. And I mean, I'm like, talk about the kryptonite of an Enneagram 3. It's like,
I know.
But of course, like, you're a woman of faith and you've already mentioned, like, what an interesting thing that God would use what's difficult in this world for. Mm-hmm. It sounds like to me in like some pretty redeeming ways in your life. Doesn't make it less hard though.
I mean, it doesn't. But I, it's so interesting you bring that up because I also consider it the biggest blessing in my life. So when you mix a 3 in with that, the Lord reminds me, and I was thinking about like just Lamentations, right? And the verse in there that says, my mercies are new every single morning. Mm-hmm. And that has been like so needed for me from the from the Lord, because he's like, Adrian, like, I have to bring this new mercy every single morning to comfort you and push you along. And it's been the biggest blessing for me because it's humbling.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, Lord, if I didn't have that struggle, I think I'd be off the chain. Mm-hmm. I would have gone left really fast, probably hurt people, got egotistical. But that hurt and that keeps me also in a place where I'm like, I can only get it from you, Lord. My identity and my value and all of that can only come from you. Mm-hmm. I can't expect it from man.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's also the biggest blessing. I mean, I think a lot of blessing comes out of suffering. Mm-hmm. And that's not just me trying to reframe hurt and pain. It's true.
Yeah.
Because the Lord's mercies are new every morning. And so I'm like, I can experience pain by the end of the day. And by the next morning, the Lord's like, look what I'm showing you in this. And I'm like, Lord, you love me so much. And you show up every single day and you remind me that I can be in relationship with people and I can be in community and I can love others and they can love me, but I'm expecting my value and my self-worth to come from you.
Yeah.
And I can just read that. You made that promise and you made it so easy for me just to get, you know, confirmed in that every single day.
You keep telling me that I won't find it anywhere else. Thank you so much, God.
Thank you.
I mean, that's, but yeah, it is a gift because that ultimately is not a foundation that an identity can be built on.
Right.
And yet we know that we have a tendency and like a continual tendency to go that way, like in our personalities and temperaments. So I think that's amazing. And I know, I just want to like, I want to address two audiences.
Okay.
Kind of like you're a little love letter to two audiences that we have here today.
Okay.
The first would be any aspiring young leaders who just heard your story and they're like, well, shoot, Adrian started her own company when she was 27. I'm already 28.
Like barely started my own company.
Like
how was barely.
But I mean, really, you have achieved. You've been able to pivot. You've been able to take opportunity. You've stepped into this, you know, the only chair when you're at the top of an organization. Yeah. What's like two or three things that when you pull up with a young leader, you say, hey, pay attention to these things?
Yeah. One of them's going to be big. One of them's going to be kind of like something that people probably hear a lot. Take the time to listen.
Mm.
So, like, I was a know-it-all at 27 and 28. And so, leaders, you do have a gift. Like, there's something that that's intuitive. The likelihood is there's some kind of leadership skill that just like comes naturally to you. But make sure you still listen to people who have that same leadership skill or mentors or folks who are like, yeah, you have it like 90% right, but there's like 10% you need to refine. That would be the first one. And the second one would be, this is more for, it could be for young leaders or medium leaders or even leaders that are leading organizations for a while. There's this misconception that like change isn't a good thing. And I know like as humans, we don't love change. We never will. But the faster, what people congratulated me a lot on in the last like 3 years was being able to pivot. And they were like, but that's because you love change and you set up an environment for people to embrace and learn how to change quickly. So that when crisis happens, when unexpected things happen, it's like training a training in the military. You're prepared for it, and you have a process to get through that, and you have resources to kind of help you get through that change. And so a lot of leaders, they try to stabilize everything, and they think that's their job, is to go in and, like, make things stable and make people feel comfortable. And I'm like, actually, your job is really to disrupt things. Mm-hmm. And when you start to see things kind of hit a status quo or get comfortable, it's your job to go in and be like, I'm going to disrupt this on purpose.
Yeah.
Just for the purpose of, just for your development, for your personal growth, for the development of this organization, and for you personally, or for this team. So yeah,
that's all second. Okay. Second group of people. Okay. We are barely going to gloss over this, except that it's great because they can go right to your podcast. But what do you want to say to all the single ladies and fellas out there who, I mean, you have a lot that's beautiful about your life, but this is you are single and you have a new podcast about dating. And I just, what's when they're like, how are you doing it? You know, or whatever, however they might approach you, what are a couple of things that
I started this, this podcast around dating as a Christian, because I struggled with having conversations with people and having different perspectives of like how you're supposed to approach dating as a Christian.
What is it called?
It is called In These Streets.
Okay, In These Streets.
In These Streets.
Okay, and we'll drop it in the show notes so you guys
will
be able to
say,
find
we
it.
We have to drop it in the show notes, because if you Google it, you'll find a bunch of other In These Streets, and that's not us.
That's the wrong streets.
That's the wrong streets.
In These Streets.
Anyway, we started it because I was meeting with a friend, and we just, like, disagreed on every single perspective or strategy around dating. I'm also single and actively date, and just wanted to share, like, get other people's perspectives on, like, how do they date? And am I missing something? Or can they learn from my perspective?
Yeah.
And it not so much focusing on, like, the season of singleness, but, like, what does it mean for you to actively do this and still value relationships and get into a relationship and break up well, approach it well, keep great boundaries, and how are you supposed to approach it as a Christian versus somebody secular? And I don't actually think there's a big difference, even in the church. So that's why we approached it.
In These Streets, everyone. It's going to be awesome. I can't wait. I think I'm coming on. So
you are.
Looking forward to a very real conversation over there.
Season two.
Awesome. Okay, you guys. Well, thank you. Thank you, Adrian, for just,
thank you.
This was like you just blew us away with, like, a lot of wisdom. And I hope, like, there's a couple of takeaways I'm even just taking with me as we kind of close. But I'm so grateful for you. I'm grateful for our friendship. And let's keep pressing on in things that don't require us to be successful.
Yeah. Thank you, Nicole.
Bye, guys. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to the Let's Be Real podcast. If you have a question for the show, you can send it to me at Nicole@NicoleYunis.com. And hey, if you're enjoying this, we'd love for you to like, subscribe, share it with your friends, pass it on, shout it from the rooftops, whatever you feel like doing, because the reality is, let's get as many people getting real as possible. Talk to you soon.